Daniel chapter 8, we're going to move on in our study of Daniel. And as we go through the amazing prophetic visions of Daniel, it's not my purpose to try to expound on them in every detail and run every cross-reference, because who knows how long that would take. There's so much here. There's so much in Daniel that's connected, of course, with the book of Revelation and many other prophetic passages. And the Bible has a lot to say about these type of things we're studying. But it's my goal in these lessons to just help you gain a basic understanding of what's going on here in Daniel. I hope to give you a good framework of the context and what's being dealt with, and then you can trace out the details more for yourself in your own Bible study. Because like I said, there are a lot of details to look at. But also, I'm convinced that many details will only be understood by the godly remnant living in the last days of prophecy, seeing these things take place. There are things, and we're going to see it again this morning in Daniel 8, there's some things in here I just don't grasp, and I don't think anybody really will until they're being fulfilled. Now, that's not I always say this, it's not a cop-out. That's just the way it is. We're living in the mystery. We're not living in these days. And there's things here that the people who are living in the times this will be fulfilled will be able to take these things and put it together a lot better than we can. But we need to try to have a basic understanding of the prophetic kingdom program. It's important for us, even though we're living in the mystery age, to understand the goal of prophecy, understand things about it. We learn a lot by way of contrast, comparison and contrast. And God gave us the whole book. He didn't just give us Paul's epistles. He wants us to study the whole book. So we are endeavoring to do that here in our church. But I remind you that the vision in chapter 7 concerns the end of Gentile dominion on the earth. And I believe all of it will be fulfilled in the 70th week, that final 7 years before the second coming. We commonly call it the tribulation period. Some people, pitch a fit and say, it's not called the tribulation. Well, we understand that, but for convenience sake, it's okay to, for an example, the word rapture or trinity. These are words that clearly describe Bible doctrine, and for convenience we use them. Although we need to be specific, because when I say the tribulation, that might mean different things to different people, so we try to elaborate some. But the Antichrist, he's going to persecute the saints. That's emphasized in Daniel 7. But when Christ comes, he will destroy the Antichrist. He will establish his righteous kingdom in the earth, and the saints will reign with him. And that was emphasized. There were things about the Antichrist in Daniel 7 that we talked about in general, but boy, you can really run some references and look at it in detail. And also the issue of the saints reigning. You have the first resurrection of prophecy concerning the saints at the second coming, when the kingdom is established. And you think about those that had been persecuted, those who had even been martyred. Many martyrs will be killed in the tribulation, but they're going to be resurrected to reign on the earth. And those whom the Antichrist persecuted so fiercely will get the kingdom under the Lord Jesus Christ. But as we come to chapter 8, it's very similar in layout. If you recall our twofold outline of chapter 7, it's almost identical. You have in the first part of it the vision, and in the latter part the interpretation. Now, I spelled interpretation right this time. I don't know if anybody picked up on this, but last time when I went to wipe the board off, it said interpretation without an R after the P. I looked so ignorant up here with them. That's going to happen. We're going to misspell words, But the vision of the ram and the he-goat, that's in verses 1 through 14, and then the interpretation in verses 15 to 27. And we can know the things that are interpreted to Daniel by Gabriel, but he doesn't give Daniel every detail. Okay, so those things, if it's not in the interpretation, I'm not going to be dogmatic about it. We could take some guesses about some things. But, Daniel was told at the end of his book to shut it up to the time of the end. But Revelation unfolds much more. But You know, chapter 7 was about the end of Gentile dominion, but chapter 8 is going to begin to give us details about the rise of Antichrist, what region he comes out of, and enough information. And it's going to continue on into Daniel 10, 9, 10, and 11, 12. I mean, we're going to get even more details as we go. But the godly remnant is going to be able to take these things and identify the Antichrist to know exactly who he is, because there's so much information. Really, you know, the Bible's all about Jesus Christ, and there's so many types and prophecies and details. But then also, there's an Antichrist, a false Christ, a counterfeit, and there's a lot of types and details. And so we need to know who the true Christ is, and we need to be... Now, look, we're not going to have to worry about the Antichrist, I understand that. But it's still helpful for us to be able to get a basic idea of it. The people living in the times when the Antichrist is on the scene, they'll understand a lot more than we do about him. But I remind you that, remember, beginning in chapter 2, verse 4, on through chapter 7, verse 28, Daniel was... That portion was written in Aramaic, and it had to do primarily with the things concerning the Gentiles. But now we come to chapter 8, verse 1. It switches back to Hebrew. And this is because this is information that the Hebrew saints are going to be using to identify the Antichrist. Now, Daniel had this vision at the end of the reign of Belshazzar. It was about 2 years after the vision of chapter 7. And he's in his upper 80s, maybe about 87 years old. What we can know about it is revealed in the interpretation that was given by Gabriel to Daniel. Look in chapter 8, verse number 16. I heard a man's voice between the banks of Eli, which called and said, Gabriel, make this man to understand the vision. And so he's going to give the interpretation, and there's going to be an emphasis about how, at the end of verse 17, for example, at the time of the end shall be the vision. And it talks about the last end in verse 19 and the latter time in verse 23. So once again, we need to understand right off the bat that the bulk of this is going to be fulfilled in the tribulation. Now, most commentaries say when you come to Daniel 8, and I'm talking about good premillennial dispensational commentaries, they're going to say the little horn here is Antiochus Epiphanes that was already fulfilled in history before the time of Christ. And I'm not going to talk about that because I don't think this is what this is about. So I'm not going to give you all that information. You can look at any commentary like Larkin's commentary or any commentary on dispensational premillennial and see the details of that. But, you know, Antiochus Epiphanes was a Roman, I believe. He wasn't of Greece, so he doesn't even fit here with the narrative. But the point is that this is about the Antichrist who's going to arise at the time of the end. Now, Antiochus Epiphanes and what he did, and they talk about in history how he desecrated the temple and slew a pig on the altar and so forth. He was probably just a foreview, you know, but he wasn't the fulfillment, okay? So let's pick it up, verse, and I'm not exactly sure I'm going to do this. I'm going to try to cover the whole chapter. I think we'll just read through it and then come back and say some things with the time we have. But let's work through this. Daniel 8, verse 1, the third year of the reign of the king Belshazzar. And again, this is out of chronological order. We already saw the death of Belshazzar. You know, the first six chapters were historic, but the history was prophetic pictures. But 7 through 12 is the prophetic visions of Daniel himself. So the Daniel's not laid out chronologically. You've got to keep that in mind. So this is about 2 years, again, after the vision we saw in chapter 7. This is right at the end of Belshazzar's reign before he died in the fall of Babylon. A vision appeared unto me, even to me, Daniel, after that which appeared unto me at the first. And I think he's referring back to what he saw in chapter 7. And I saw in a vision, and it came to pass, when I saw, that I was at Shushan in the palace. Now that's the chief city of Persia. So he's not in Babylon when he has this. He's in the chief city of Persia. That's where Nehemiah was, remember? He was in Shushan, the palace, which is in the province of Elam. And I saw in a vision, and I was by the river Eli. And I'm not sure if that's how you say it, but you don't know either, so let's not worry about it. Then I lifted up mine eyes and saw, and behold, there stood before the river a ram which had two horns, and the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other, and the higher came up last. Okay, and we're going to see that's two kings, and the latter becomes more prominent and takes over the former. And this is, I'll just go ahead and tell you, this is Darius and Cyrus, the kings of Media and Persia. Cyrus becomes the stronger, takes over. I saw the ram pushing westward and northward and southward. So he's taken over. I mean, he has a vast dominion. So that no beast might stand before him. Neither was there... And you notice, by the way, again, with these kingdoms, they're symbolized by animals, right? Okay. I mean, we saw the wild beasts in chapter 7. It's still beasts here. No beast might stand before him. Neither was there any that could deliver out of his hand. But he did according to his will and became great. And I was considering... And as I was considering, behold, an he-goat came up from the west on the face of the whole earth and touched not the ground. I take that to mean that so he was moving so swiftly he wasn't even hitting the ground while he was going. And you know, this is clear. We're going to see this later on. This is the king of... this has got to do with Grecia, and the horn on this he-goat is Alexander the Great. And if you, everybody knows Alexander the Great conquered very swiftly. I mean, he accomplished the known, he conquered the known world and died at the age of 33. I mean, he moved fast. He was a tremendous warrior. It says, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes, and he came to the ram that had two horns, which I had been seen standing before the river, and ran unto him in the fury of his power. Somebody sees he's running, and it's the fury of his power. He's taken over quickly. And I saw him come close under the ram, and he was moved with choler against him. That word choler only appears twice in the Bible. It's basically talking about anger and wrath. If you look at the etymology of the word, it has to do with, you know, there's a disease, cholera. It has to do with the bile. And in ancient times, it's supposed to be the result of an excess of bile that would make you that angry. It's interesting to trace etymology on words. But he's just talking about a lot of wrath. He was moved with choler against him and smote the ram and brake his two horns. And there was no power in the ram to stand before him, but he cast him down to the ground and stamped upon him. And it's not enough just to knock him down. Go ahead and stomp on him, right? I mean, he's fierce. There was none that could deliver the ram out of his hand. Therefore, the he-goat waxed very great. He increased. Waxed is talking about an increase. And when he was strong, this is so interesting. You know, when he was strong, the great horn was broken. So at the age of 33, he was a drunk. And he had conquered the world, and he was depressed that he had no more countries to conquer. And he died at the age of 33 of a fever. He was in poor health at a young age because of his lifestyle. So it says the great horn was broken. When he was strong, he was broken. It's telling you he's going to die young. And for it came up four notable ones toward the four winds of heaven. So the notable horn is broken, and in the place of it is four notable ones. And everybody knows, that knows anything about history, that Alexander the Great was followed by... his kingdom was divided into four parts. Four generals that had been under him took over, and it was divided into four parts. North, south, east, and west. That's the four winds. Now, very important you understand right here, we're fixing to jump. Okay? When you're studying prophecy, you have to be careful because sometimes God will skip over a couple thousand years just like that. So we've been looking at history. Now we're jumping ahead to the tribulation. And that's clear. There is no way that what we're about to read was fulfilled by Antiochus Epiphanes. He might have been in some way a foreview, but he's not the fulfillment. Look at verse 9. And out of one of them came forth a little horn. We already saw this little horn back in chapter 7, and he was clearly the Antichrist. And that's who he is here. Which waxed exceeding great toward the south and toward the east and toward the pleasant land. That would be the land of Israel. And it waxed great, even to the host of heaven, and cast down some of the host and of the stars to the ground and stamped upon them. No man has done that. That's going to be fulfilled in the 70th week with Satan being cast out of heaven with his angels. There's a supernatural element to all of this here. Yea, he magnified himself even to the prince of the host. I believe he's magnifying himself against the Lord. And by him the daily sacrifice was taken away. Now this is what we're going to talk much more about this as we go, because it's mentioned again in chapter 9. It's mentioned again in chapter 11. It's what Jesus Christ called the abomination of desolation, spoken of by Daniel the prophet. It's going to happen in the middle of the 70th week when the Antichrist sits in the temple of God and says, I am God. It's called the lie. Most of the world is going to believe it. They're going to believe he's God. They're going to worship him. And it says, by him the daily sacrifice was taken away. See, the temple is going to be operating during that time. There are going to be sacrifices. But he's going to stop the sacrifices saying, look, I'm the fulfillment. I'm the Lord. And the place of his sanctuary was cast down. We read in the book of Revelation how Jerusalem is going to be trodden underfoot 42 months, the last 3.5 years. And an host was given him against the daily sacrifice by reason of transgression. And it cast down the truth to the ground. Again, this is the lie. In Romans 1, it talks about the lie, which is the deification of man. This is the absolute culmination of that. This is nothing but a man filled with Satan being worshipped by the world. And it practiced and prospered. It's going to be a successful lie. All right, so then I heard one saint speaking, and another saint said unto that certain saint which spake, how long shall be the vision concerning the daily sacrifice and the transgression of desolation, to give both the sanctuary and the host to be trodden underfoot? And he said unto me, unto 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. And I don't know exactly how that's going to work, but I do know it will be 2,300 literal days fulfilled in the future. And notice it's the 2,300 days when the sanctuary is cleansed. That's important to note. Came to pass when even I, Daniel. Now here's the interpretation. Came to pass when even I, Daniel, had seen the vision and sought for the meaning. Then behold, there stood before me as the appearance of a man. And angels in the Bible, when they make appearances, it's always as a man. And I heard a man's voice between the banks of Uli, which called and said, Gabriel, make this man to understand the vision. So he came near where I stood, and when he came, I was afraid and fell upon my face. So evidently, he didn't look like a little baby floating around in a diaper with wings. He was a fearful looking dude, all right? It amazes me where people come up with stuff about angels, you know. It's out of their imagination. It's not out of the Bible. And he fell on his face, but he said to me, understand, O son of man. So look, God wants us to understand. When God's revealing things, it's so that we might understand. Understand. Notice he didn't say, feel this, Daniel. Feel the vision. No, he said, understand it. For at the time of the end shall be the vision. Now that's clear. This is the end of days. This is the 70th week. This is the great tribulation. Now as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep on my face toward the ground. But he touched me and set me upright. And he said, behold, I will make thee know what shall be in the last end of the indignation. This is the time of judgment. For at the time appointed, the end shall be. It's all laid out in the Scripture. Now here it is. The ram which thou sawest having two horns are the kings of Media and Persia. Okay, that's already been fulfilled. And the rough goat, that would be the he-goat, is the king of Grecia. That's already been fulfilled. And the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king. The first, as I think, in contrast with the four that come up after him, and the first king being Alexander the Great, that's been fulfilled. Now, that being broken, whereas four stood up for it, four come up out of in his place, four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation, but not in his power. They're not going to have the power Alexander the Great had. And in the latter time. Now, here's the thing. The four kings, that's been fulfilled, yet it jumps. And remember from chapter 7, there are four kingdoms in the 70th week, out of which come the ten horns, out of which comes Antichrist. So we're jumping. And in the latter time, that's the key there, in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressions are come to a full, that hadn't happened yet. That's going to happen in the future. Yeah, this is obviously the Antichrist, a king of fierce countenance. He, you know, they called Dale Earnhardt the Intimidator, but I don't think he's going to have anything on this guy. He's going to be a violent... They say in Revelation 13, who can make war with the beast? Nobody can defeat this man. Well, I know one who will. Jesus Christ comes and destroys him without lifting a finger. But he's going to be the mightiest man on the earth. Why? Because in the middle of the week, he's filled with Satan himself. He's going to be a supernatural power. He said, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up, and his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. Again, the man of sin, I'll get it right, 2 Thessalonians 2, the man of sin, first 3.5 years, becomes the son of perdition, last 3.5 years. And it has to do with him being filled with Satan. In Revelation 13, we see he has his power from the dragon. There is an unholy trinity. You have the holy trinity, Father, Son, and Spirit, but you have the unholy trinity of dragon, beast, and false prophet. And it has a correspondence to the Father, Son, and Spirit. But it's the unholy trinity you see in the book of Revelation very clearly. He shall destroy wonderfully. That doesn't mean it's going to be a positive thing. It's just going to be an amazing thing what he's accomplishing in a short time. And shall prosper and practice. I mean, he's going to get it done. He's not going to be talking the talk, okay? He's going to talk all right. He's known for his word, but he's going to do what he says he's going to do. And shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. He's going to greatly persecute Israel. Amazing thing is, look at it says, and through his policy also he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand, and he shall magnify himself in his heart, and by peace shall destroy many. You see, he comes on the scene with peace. He makes a treaty, a covenant with Israel, and he's going to protect them, and they fall for it. And yet, when Satan's cast out of heaven in the midst of the week, that covenant's broken, and that peacemaker becomes a peacebreaker and a great persecutor. Okay? That's just an overview of what's going to happen. So his policy, that's his peace policy. You know, everybody's talking about peace in the Middle East. Well, he's going to do it. It's just not going to last very long. He shall also stand up against the Prince of Princes. That's the Lord Jesus. I love this. Look at what it says. But he shall be broken without hand. The Lord's not even going to have to punch him in his mouth. All he's going to do is speak the word. He's done. Into the lake of fire he goes. And the vision of the evening and the morning was, which was told is true. You can bank on this. Wherefore, shut thou up the vision. More will be unfolded later in the book of Revelation. For it shall be for many days. Now, I take that to be the 2300 days. It is evening and morning. It is literal days here. That period is less than 7 years. It's just over 6 years. In the Bible, a month is always 30 days. Okay? And, you know, when you look at the 70th week, 42 months and 42 months, 1260 and 1260, 3.5 years, 3.5 years. How the 2300 days plays out for sure, I might talk more about that later. I'm still working on that. But anyway, verse 27, not Daniel fainted. This is serious stuff, man. I mean, this isn't a joke. This is serious stuff, and was sick certain days. Perhaps, I mean, it was so heavy on him, it made him sick. Afterward, I rose up and did the king's business. And I was astonished at the vision, but none understood it. I mean, people that he might have talked to about it couldn't understand it. Daniel had some understanding, but he didn't have a complete understanding because some of it was sealed up. But a little practical application, you notice how he understood a lot about what was going to happen in the future, but he still took care of his daily duties. He said, you know, he got this great vision and then he did the king's business. understanding prophecy and understanding the future should not keep us from our daily duties. We still got to do what we're supposed to do every day, not just sit around and talk about the future. Okay? What did Jesus say in that parable, "Occupy till I come," right? That's what Daniel was doing. Now, got about 10 minutes to kind of cover some highlights here. I think just reading through it and making some comments, you see basically what's happening. But you have the ram. You see on the board, I put a few notes to help. The ram with two horns, again, that's the kings of Media and Persia. The first horn is Darius. The latter one is Cyrus. He becomes more prominent and takes over. But then here comes this he-goat, which is Greece, with this notable horn, which is Alexander the Great. But as a young man, he dies, and out of that come four notable horns that take its place. His kingdom is divided under four generals. Now, I may not have this exactly right. There's some debate on this, but this will be good enough for now. Okay, you have the four. Well, it's more than one area, but I try to just pick one for brevity. Macedonia, Turkey, Syria, and Egypt. And that'd be the four winds. And I think it's looked at from the land of Israel is how you would know from what vantage point is north, south, east, and west. Here's the thing. And I think the reason why, you say, well, why does it have this historic fulfillment and then jump all the way to the Antichrist? What's the point of doing that? I think the point is when we get to Daniel 11, the emphasis is going to be on the king of the north. And what that's showing you is, you notice how Macedonia would be to the west, Turkey would be to the east, and from that vantage point, Syria is to the north and Egypt's to the south. The king of the north is the Antichrist. You know what he's called in the Bible 13 times? Well, and I'm not sure if every passage is the Antichrist, but I know the Assyrian is found 13 of all things, 13 times. The Assyrian. That's what he is. He's from Syria. Okay, he's not from Europe. You know, let's just lay that to rest, this whole thing. And look, I've told you this before. People do that thing with the revived Roman Empire and the European Union and all that because most of those teachers weren't really taking into account the gap like they should have in terms of the mystery. And there were certain, and they were also trying to, a lot of these prophecy teachers are trying to get fulfillment in the current time when that's not happening. Who knows how everything's going to shake up and come together before we're raptured and even after we're raptured. The 70th week doesn't have to start the next day. So it's all in the Middle East, okay? Okay, it's not the European Union. The kingdoms of the world are going to be under the Antichrist, but where is the focus? It's going to be the Middle East. Now, look in, hold a marker here. For time, like I said, you can get a concordance to look at it yourself, but go to Isaiah 10. For one example, there's no doubt about it. Isaiah 10. By the way, he is also the king of Babylon, because that's going to be really the seat of his power. According to, I think it's Zechariah 5, Babylon's going to be rebuilt greater than it's ever been. In the book of Revelation, Babylon is Babylon. It's not Rome. Okay, Rome is a daughter. The Roman Catholic Church is a daughter of the Great Whore, but the Roman Catholic Church is not the Great Whore. The Great Whore is older than that. Goes all the way back to Nimrod. Okay? Babylon's going to be rebuilt. The Antichrist is going to be the king of Babylon. He's the king of Assyria. He's the Assyrian because of the region from which he comes out of. In Isaiah 10, verse number 5, O Assyrian, the rod of mine anger and the staff in their hand is mine indignation. I will send him against an hypocritical nation, and against the people of my wrath will I give him a charge to take the spoil and to take the prey and to tread them down like the mire of the streets. Howbeit he meaneth not so, neither doth his heart think so, but it is in his heart to destroy and cut off nations, not a few. I'll just stop reading there. It's God that sends the Antichrist. I mean, it's Satan's false Christ, but God allows it. If God didn't allow it, it couldn't happen. It's a result of God's judgment. In 2 Thessalonians 2, concerning Antichrist, it says God gives them a strong delusion. In Revelation 6, with the seals open, it's the Lamb that opens the seal to send forth Antichrist. So he says, the rod of mine anger. Look in chapter 14, Isaiah 14. And you have the fall of Lucifer, and it's connected with the Antichrist, because again, the Antichrist is going to be Satan incarnate. But he says in verse 4, thou shalt take up this proverb against the king of Babylon. And you go through here, and it's talking about Lucifer, but it's also applied to the Antichrist. And then in verse number 25, that I will break the Assyrian in my land, and upon my mountain shall tread him underfoot. Then shall his yoke depart from off of them, and his burden depart from their shoulders. This is the purpose that is purposed upon the whole earth. And this is the hand that is stretched out upon all nations. I love this. Look at this. For the Lord of hosts hath purposed, and who shall disannul it? And his hand is stretched out, who shall turn it back? Do you see that the king of Babylon is the Assyrian? Okay? It's Antichrist. Satan incarnate. You can study that more for yourself. Let me just give you a few things here. The reason why I'm shying away from going through all these details, because you understand the Antichrist, there's a lot of stuff about him. And there's like 18 clear types of the Antichrist. That's 6 times 3. 666, right? 26 titles. That's 13 times 2. 26 titles. And we call him the Antichrist, and that's fine. Some people say that's not biblical. 1 John 2:18 says that Antichrist shall come, right? Antichrist. That's a biblical name for him, but that's not his only name. He has many titles, 26 of them at least. Again, the Assyrian, that's 13 times. Oh, I mean, you keep seeing these numbers in association with him. So, with the few minutes we have, let me just remind you, I'm not going to read all these verses. We already read the passage, but look at the details you get in Daniel 8. He waxed exceeding great on the earth. So, he's going to have the greatest kingdom Satan can produce through man. And it says he waxed great even to the host of heaven. And it talks about the stars falling. You go to Revelation 12, and there's a war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon and his angels. Satan is cast out to the earth and his angels with him. The Antichrist is going to be Satan incarnate. I believe the 10 kings in confederation with him are also filled with evil spirits. These angels that are cast down. There's going to be a cohabitation once again between fallen angels and women, according to Daniel chapter 2. I know a lot of people don't like that. I don't care if you like it or not. I believe that's what the Bible says. Somebody said, explain it. I don't want to explain it. Don't need to explain it. My job is to believe what the Bible says. There's a commingling there, and it said, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men. So whoever they are is not the seed of men. Okay? And then it says he magnified himself. Well, obviously, he is going to sit in the temple saying he is God. Paul said that he exalts himself and opposes everything that is called God. So he's going to demand worldwide worship. It's going to be a one-world religion, and he's the God of it, okay? And he's going to magnify himself against the true God. And then again, the saying of the abomination desolation, when the temple is made desolate through that abomination of him sitting in the temple saying he's God. We're going to study that more because it's mentioned two more times in Daniel. So we don't have time to deal with it now, but we will come back and look at these verses and the others. It says he has a fierce countenance. Well, again, I mean, who can make war with the beast? He's going to be a mighty man of battle, and only the Lord can destroy him. It says he's understanding dark sentences. In Ezekiel 28, it says that he's wiser than Daniel. We know how wise Daniel is, but the Antichrist is going to be even wiser than that. It says it's not by his own power. That's because he's going to be filled with Satan. It's going to be by the power of the dragon. It says he's going to destroy wonderfully. That means he's going to conquer the whole world. He's going to be based in the Middle East, but it's going to be worldwide in scope. And he's going to destroy. He's called the destroyer, okay, because he is destroying many people. There's going to be a lot of bloodshed, and much of that's going to be the saints. He's going to persecute the saints. But his policy, political genius, okay, a political genius, and he uses peace to destroy many. Amazing. And then he's going to stand up against the princes. He's going to fight against the true Christ. but he'll be destroyed without hand. Christ will destroy him with the brightness of his coming and the sword of his mouth. You could study all that out. There's so many verses on all of that. That's a lot of details right there. So again, the bottom line is on this, we've got a historic fulfillment with the ram and the two horns, the he-goat with the horn, and then the four horns. But then the four horns also jump to the four kingdoms that were in Daniel 7. Out of that comes the little horn, the Antichrist, the Assyrian. You got to look at that, as they say in London, when you're riding the tube, mind the gap. You got to mind the gap. Y'all ever been to London? Every time you ride on that, what we would call the subway, every time you get off, they say, mind the gap, mind the gap. There's a gap in the door, and if you might trip, I guess I've been there, and I heard that, I about got sick of it in about 5 minutes. Mind the gap, mind the gap. Yeah. You better mind there's a gap between verse 8 and 9, and understand the emphasis is on the tribulation, all right? Father, thank you.